This book is called The Underneath by Kathy Appelette. It's got some really cute drawing of a hound dog and two kittens on the front. And since it's about animals, I think we're going to like it. There is nothing lonelier than a cat who has been loved, at least for a while, and then abandoned on the side of a road. A small calico cat, her family, the one she lived with, has left her in this old and forgotten forest, this forest where the rain is soaking into her soft fur. How long has she been walking? Hours? Days? She wasn't even sure how she got here, so far from the town where she grew up. Something about a car, something about a long drive, and now here she is. Here in this old forest where the rain slipped between the branches and settled into her fur. The pine needles were soft beneath her feet, and she heard the water splashing into puddles all around, noticing the evening roll in, the sky growing darker. She walked and walked farther and farther from the red dirt road. She should have been afraid. She should have been concerned about the lightning slicing the drops of rain in two and electrifying the air. She should have been worried in the falling dark, but mostly she was lonely. She walked some more on the soft pine needles and until she found an old nest, maybe a squirrel's, maybe a skunk's, maybe a porcupine's. It's hard to tell when a nest has gone unused for a long time, and this one surely had. She was grateful to find it, an old nest, empty, a little dry, not very, but somewhat out of the rain, away from the splashes of lightning, here at the base of a gnarled tupelo tree, somewhere in the heart of the piney woods. Here she curled up in a tight ball and waited, purring to her unborn babies, and the trees, the tall and kindly trees, watching over her while she slept the whole night through. Chapter 2. Ah, the trees. On the other side of the forest, there is an old loblolly pine. Once it was the tallest tree in the forest. 100 feet up, it reached right up to the clouds, right beneath the stars. Such a tree. Now broken in half, it stands beside the creek, called the Little Sorrowful. Trees are the keepers of stories. If you can understand the languages of oak and elm and tallow, they might tell you about another storm, an earlier one, 25 years ago to be exact, a storm that barreled across the sky, filling up the streams and bays, how it dripped and charged, rushed through the boughs. Its black clouds were enormous, thick and heavy with the water it had scooped up from the Gulf of Mexico, due south of here, swirling its way north, where it sucked up more moisture from the Sabine River to the east, the river that divides Texas and Louisiana. This tree, 1,000 years old, huge and wide, straight and true, would say how it lifted its branches and welcomed the heavy rain, and how it shivered as the cool water ran down its trunk and washed the dust from its long needles, and how it sighed in that coolness. But then, in that dwindling of rain, that calming of wind, that solid darkness, a rogue bolt of lightning zipped from the clouds and struck. Bark flew in splinters. The trunk sizzled from the top of the crown to the deepest roots. The bolt pierced the very center of the tree. A tree as old as this has a large and sturdy heart, but it is no match for 1 billion volts of electricity. The giant tree trembled for a full minute. A shower of sparks and wood fell to the wet forest floor. Then it stood completely still. A smaller tree might have jumped, might have spun and spun and spun until it crashed into the earth, but not this pine. This loblolly pine, rooted so deep into the clay beside the creek, it simply stood beneath the blue-black sky while steam boiled from the gash 6 feet up. An open wound, this pine did not fall to the earth or slide into the creek, not then. And not now. It still stands. Most of its branches have cracked and fallen. The upper stories have long ago trembled to the forest floor. Some of them have slipped into the creek and drifted downstream, down to the Silver Sabine, down to the Gulf of Mexico, down. But the trunk remains tall and hollow, straight and true, right here on the Little Sorrowful, just a mile or so from a calico cat curled inside her dry nest while the rain falls all around. Chapter 3. Meanwhile, deep beneath the hard red dirt, held tight in the grip of the old tree's roots, something has come loose. A large jar buried centuries ago, a jar made from the same clay that lines the bed of the creek, a vessel with clean lines and a smooth surface, whose decoration was etched by an artist of merit, a jar meant for storing berries and crawdads and clean water, not for being buried like this, far beneath the ground, held tight in the web of the tree's tangled roots. This jar, with its contents, a creature even older than the forest itself, older than the creek, the last of her kind. This beautiful jar, shaken loose in the random strike of lightning that pierced the tree's heart and seared downward into the tangled roots. Ever since, they have been loosening their grip. Trapped, the creature has waited. For 1,000 years, she has slipped in and out of her deep, deep sleep, stirred in her pitch-black prison beneath the dying pine. Soon, she whispered into the deep and solemn dark, my time will come. Then she closed her eyes and returned to sleep. Chapter 4. It wasn't the churring of the mourning doves that woke the calico cat, or the uncertain sun peeking through the clouds, or even the rustling of a nearby squirrel. No, it was the baying of a nearby hound. She had never heard a song like it. It all blue in its shape, blue and tender, slipping through the branches, gliding on the morning air. She felt the ache of it. Here was a song that sounded exactly the way she felt. Oh, I woke up on this bayou, got a chain around my heart. Yes, I'm sitting on this bayou, got a chain tied round my heart. Can't you see I'm dying? Can't you see I'm crying? Can't you throw an old dog a bone? Oh, I woke up, it was raining, but it was tears came falling down. Yes, I woke up and it was raining, but it was tears came falling down. Can't you see I'm trying? Can't you hear my crying? Can't you see I'm all alone? Can't you throw this old dog a bone? She crooked her ears to see which direction it came from, and then she stood up and followed its bluesy notes deeper and deeper into the piney woods, away from the road, from the old abandoned nest, away from the people who had left her with her belly full of kittens. She followed that song. Chapter 5. For cats, a hound is a natural enemy. This is the order of things. Yet how could the calico cat be afraid of a hound who sang, whose notes fill the air with so much longing? But when she got to the place where the hound sang, she knew that something was wrong. She stopped. In front of her sat a shabby frame house with peeling paint, a house that slumped on one side of it as if it were sinking into the red dirt. The windows were cracked and grimy. There was a rusted pickup truck parked next to it. A deep puddle of thick oil pooled beneath its undercarriage. She sniffed the air. It was wrong, this place. The air was heavy with the scent of old bones, of fish and dried skins, skins that hung from the porch like a ragged curtain. Wrong was everywhere. She should turn around. She should go away. She should not look back. She swallowed. Perhaps she had taken the wrong path. What path should she take? All the paths were the same. She felt her kittens stir. It surely wouldn't be safe to stay here in this shabby place. She was about to turn around when there it was again, the song, the silver notes, the ones that settled just beneath her skin. Her kittens stirred again as if they too could hear the beckoning song. She stepped close to the unkempt house and stepped into the overgrown yard. She cocked her ears and let the notes lead her, pull her around the corner. There they were, those bluesy notes. Oh, I woke up, it was raining, but it was tears come falling down. Yes, I woke up, it was raining, but it was tears came falling down. Can't you see I'm trying? Can't you hear my crying? Can't you see I'm all alone? Can't you see, throw this old dog a bone? Then she realized the song wasn't calling for a bone. It was calling for something else, someone else. Another step, another corner, and there he was, chained to the corner of the back porch. His eyes were closed and his head held back, baying. She should be afraid. She should turn around and run. She should climb the nearest tree. She did not. Instead, she simply walked right up to this baying hound and rubbed against his front legs. She knew the answer to his song, for if she could bay, her song would be the same. Here, right here, Ranger. Chapter 6. Lightning is not the only thing that strikes. On the very same night, 25 years ago, when that single blinding bolt struck the old loblolly pine beside the creek, there was a boy. A boy who prowled the mean streets of South Houston in the run-down neighborhoods next to the ship channel. A boy who embraced the darkness, darkness filled with huge gray wharf rats that scurried along the rafters beneath the tar-coat piers of the docks. Scavengers. Once he caught one in a crab trap and kept it there, hidden, watching it slowly die from hunger and thirst. Watched it while it twisted against the wooden slats of the trap, desperate in its hunger, fierce in its desperation. Here was this boy whose father worked on the wharves, his shoulders broad and thick from loading and unloading the ships all day, who spent his free evenings at the Deep Channel Bar, a place that served only dock workers and the women who served them, a man who drank the hard-edged vodka brought in from Russia and the bitter gin from England, who stumbled home just as hard-edged and bitter as the vodka and the gin. This boy, a boy who sneered at kindness even from his mother who loved flowers and birds. When she finally left him and his hard-edged father, the boy never even missed her. His timid mother, with her small garden behind the house, her pitiable bird bath that he had laced with rat poison one evening while she slept. The last time he saw her, she was holding the body of a bright red cardinal in her hands, so red it could have been blood. He laughed, laughed at the blood-red feathers dripping between her fingers, at her, his mother, with the cardinal in her palms. Beware this cruel boy, this boy of darkness, this boy who had a name once, a real name, whose father is a drunken rage, caught the boy's face with the side of his fist and broke the bones in his left cheek, split the skin of that tender boy cheek and left a deep and ugly gash. The boy gashed in a blaze of pain, and the father hit him again, and then fell to the floor, and passed out at last. Any other boy might have felt sorry for himself. He might have stood over his hideous father and wept, but not this boy. This boy stood in the shabby house where he grew up and took one look around and glowered. Hatred, like sweat, coated his skin. Blood oozed from the corner of his mouth. He picked up his father's brand new rifle and walked into the dark, damp street of the South Houston, his nose dripping, his right eye swollen shut, his jaw never able to close properly again. He walked past the docks, the ships with their flags from India and Libya and Austria, their holds full of spice curry, of baby monkeys poached from the jungle, of aged red wine and caskets made of ancient oak, past the concrete warehouse and broken-down houses of the southeastern end of Houston. His face burned. He walked. Past all that, past the ships, the refineries, the marshy bayous, and the steamy city. In the deep, dark forest, trees of dense, they blocked the street, kept the hated sun off his shattered face. A boy, on foot, for 300 miles, 300 miles north of Houston, disappeared into the woods and hung his real name, whatever it was, on a post oak tree, carved in there, and never looked back and never used that name again. Lightning struck a tree. A father struck his son, and a boy struck out. This boy, whose broken face now resembled the prehistoric fish that still swim in the muddy waters of the bayous, half fish, half alligator, a gar, the most vicious of the scale and fin crew. Beware his razor-sharp teeth, his steel-trapped jaws, his eyes that glow in the murky water. Here, then, is a hard-edged, bitter boy, become a man known as Garface. For 25 years, while the old loblolly pine shed its branches and bark into the little sorrowful creek and watched them drift toward the sea, Garface has roamed this hidden forest. Here, underneath the canopy of the watching willows and birches and ash, over this past quarter century, the years have softened the old pine. Not so Garface. Do not cross his angry path. Do not. Chapter 7. At first, the hound was surprised. What was a cat doing here? In his yard? Oh, yes, there were cats in the forest. He had seen their shadows at the edge of his vision, but none had ever entered his domain before. Wouldn't think of crossing the edge of the 20-foot circle that was marked by his chain. He had warned them to stay back, just as he had warned the raccoons and the possums and the occasional snake. Stay back. This time he just stood there, while this cat walked right up to him. He looked down at her, this small calico cat, purring now, and he knew through and through. Here was someone who had found him all alone. Here was someone who walked right up to him and rubbed against his sturdy front legs and stood on her hind legs and licked his silky ears, who touched his brown nose with her small pink one. At long last, after so many years of being tied up in this corner, chained to a post, here was someone who understood his song. All right, girls, that's all for tonight. Sleep tight. Love ya.